with much gratitude to Rav Einemer and the entire Shomrei Emunah congregation for extending an invitation to the Tournament Tzion Kollel. It's always a pleasure to be mishtateh. And also I do want to express a special appreciation to Rabbi and Mrs. Spetter for the very, very magnificent job they did over the past year. The Kollel was always a very, very valuable and fine institution. But I will tell you that I know firsthand that the intensity of the learning has greatly been strengthened over this past year. And Baruch Hashem, they are a couple of boundless energy who does much to ensure that the Siddurim are strong. And he draws a lot upon the talent within our community to give different types of shiurim and the like. And that's something for which I am personally very, very grateful for. And as I always say, the chavarim of the Kollel are a very valuable resource in the community, together with the other resources in the community, and I hope that people will take advantage of what they have to offer. The topic I'm going to talk about is a topic that some of the people that come to my shiurim have heard me talk about before, but some of you have not. And in either event, certain inyanim are worthwhile to review before the holiday of Pesach. You know, it's very interesting that all the Svarim tell us that the idea of destroying the chametz also means destroying the chametz in a person's heart. Chametz, which is puffed up and filled with air, is a symbol for gaiva, a symbol for arrogance, materialism, and the like. And if you look at the prayer that you recite when you burn the chametz, Erev Pesach, you actually ask Hashem, just as I have burnt the physical bread, so may I be helped to burn the chametz of my heart. In fact, they tell the story of a famous Hasidic Rebbe, I don't know who this was, that after he was bodek the chametz, and he spent many hours being bodek the chametz, afterwards he pulled out his shirt and he said, and what do I do about the chametz in here? So his Talmidim quoted to him the Mishnah at the beginning of Pesachim that says, Kol makom she'ein machnisen bo chametz. Any place where chametz is not brought in, you don't have to search. He said, Rebbe, you don't have to search there, because that's a makom she'ein machnisen bo chametz. Of course, that may have been true for that person, but for most of us, indeed, the chametz shebelev is something that needs a very, very powerful bedika, and this is a bedika that you cannot just do the night before Pesach, even though that's when you're bodek your heart. You must do the bedika a long time before Pesach. So the thought I want to share with you is a thought from Rav Tzadok of Lublin, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes who died 1900, the very beginning of the 20th century, in which he looks at the four parshios, the four special parshios that we read before, in fact, the last one we did yesterday, before Nisan, and he looks at them as ways in which we prepare ourselves to eradicate the chametz of the hearts and therefore achieve a true liberation on Pesach. We know, of course, that the four parshios, before Rosh Chodesh Adar, is Parsha Shkalim, that's the mitzvah of the half shekel, then Parsha Zachor, which is the mitzvah of eradicating Amalek, Parsha Sparah, which is the ritual of burning the red heifer and sprinkling the ashes to make a person pure, and then yesterday we read Parsha HaChodesh, that deals with the laws of Rosh Chodesh, the laws of Rosh Chodesh, the idea of HaKodesh Elohim, and in particular the laws of the Korban Pesach and Pesach that will be observed. Rav Tzadok says that at least the first three parshios, we'll talk about the fourth one, are designed to free us from the three great enslavers in life, the inner Mitzrayims. You know, there's an inner Mitzrayim and an outer Mitzrayim. In the days when I, maybe the older people remember this, I guess I'm getting an older person already, when cigarettes used to be advertised on television, when people used to be able to watch television, there was the saying, you could take Salem out of the country, but you cannot take the country out of Salem. Oh, it's an old commercial. And the old parallel to that is, you could take the Jew out of Mitzrayim, but it's much, much harder to take Mitzrayim out of the Jew. That the word Mitzrayim does not just mean Egypt, but Mitzrayim comes from the words min ha-meitzar karatzi ka, from the desperate, narrow places I call out to God. A meitzar is that which binds you, it ties you, it enslaves you. And when you need a yetzias Mitzrayim, you need to be relieved and redeemed and freed from those things that enslave you. So Rav Tzadok says, what are the great enslavers of life? And he quoted Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos tells us Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavot. Jealousy, envy. Taiva is lust, an over-preoccupation with sensual pleasures, an over-preoccupation, as we'll see. And kavot, this incessant desire for ego gratification and glory. Those three negative factors, motzien esa adam in ha'olam, they take a person out of the world. And what that means, just very simple, it doesn't just mean you'll lose your world to come. That's obvious. A person who lives on that level will lose his world to come. But he even loses this world. Life becomes a totally miserable experience when every time you have a bracha, you look at somebody else and you say, he has it better. Or one is consumed with kavod or with taiva. What type of life is that, even in olam hazeh? And therefore, motzien es ha'adam, it destroys a person from the olam. And Rav Tzadok says that the first three parshas of Shkalim, Zachar, and Parah are designed to help us deal with each of these negative factors. Shkalim, in a way that we will explain, helps us deal with jealousy. Zachor helps us deal with tava, lust. And Parah helps us deal with kavod. And then we'll come on to what chodesh is. So how is this so? So we know Parsha Shkalim. What is Parsha Shkalim about? Every single year, Jews are supposed to give a half shekel towards the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. This half shekel was used to buy the Korbanos Tzibor. And the halacha is that the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins Rosh Chodesh Nisan, meaning to say, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you can only use newly contributed shkalim. You cannot use old shkalim. So Lahavdil, just like a federal government agency, when it reaches the end of the fiscal year, must be sure to spend all unused money. Because if they don't spend unused money, they're going to get less next year. There are actually very detailed rules in the Mishnah about what do you do with surplus shkalim. Because you cannot just carry over surplus shkalim into the next year. Because starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you have to have newly collected shkalim. So the Gemara gives us various ways that you deal with old money. But the concept of the half a shekel does say every Jew, because there's a machlokas if women are chayavas in this, but certainly every male, and some say only from 20 and above, so there are different opinions, but there is this idea of giving the half shekel for the korbanos tzibor. By the way, just to be sure people understand this, there are two different half shekel contributions that were involved with the Mishkan. One is the annual donation of the half shekel that is used for the korbanos, and that is paid every single year, and they began collecting it in Adar in order that there would be some shkalim by Nisan that they would be able to use 1 month ahead of time. And not everybody paid by Nisan. People paid throughout the whole year, and there's even rules for paying of back shkalim if you missed it, but at least there was enough money in the bank, so to speak, that they could begin to buy the korbanos from Rosh Chodesh Nisan from some newly collected money. That's the one half shekel thing. But there was another half shekel that was there as well, and that was a one-time thing, and that is a half shekel was donated of silver. It was melted down, and from the melted down half shkalim, they made what are called the adonim of the Mishkan, the sockets that held up the boards. In fact, in Kisisa, which we read on Parsha Shkalim, we're actually not even reading about the half shekel that goes for the korbanos. We're reading about the half shekel that goes for the adonim. So I want to explain briefly how shkalim deals with the issue of jealousy, but also I want to connect the two different mitzvahs of half shekel. Let's first take the half shekel that goes for the korbanos. How does that help us deal with jealousy? Well, there are two outstanding features about the half shekel that one has to keep in mind. Number one, the Torah is very insistent that it be an equal contribution. The Torah says, "Ha'ashir lo yarbe." If you're rich, you don't give any more. "V'hadal lo yamit." If you're poor, you don't give any less. You cannot give more. You cannot give less. You're only allowed to give a half shekel. Now, people who are involved in fundraising have a difficulty with this pasuk. I understand how we tell a person, "You will not be allowed to give less." Right, the tuition committee of a school says, you must give a minimum. Okay? But what institution would ever say, and we're not going to take more? I assure you that every yeshiva in the world, every shul in the world, will gladly take more. all of a sudden you're not allowed to give more? What's wrong with giving more? And the answer is obviously that the Torah is teaching us a lesson that when a Jew stands before God, they stand before God in a stance of absolute equality. That in Avodas Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machshiv everyone equal. Now, I don't mean to say, of course, that a tzaddik and a rasha are equal in God's eyes. Rather, the test is that some people have greater potential, some people have lesser potential. But as long as each person gives their full abilities to Hashem, they stand before Hashem with equal admiration, equal greatness, equal love. And in fact, the Mefarshim tell us, based on Pirkei Avos, that says, Lefum Tzara Agra, according to the pain is the reward, that actually means one who struggles harder, even if objectively they accomplish less, is more beloved to God. Imagine, to take an example from Talmud Torah, imagine if a person is a big genius and they could learn 100 pages of Gemara a day. And they decide to learn 50 a day and take off the rest of the afternoon watching movies. And another person struggles the entire day just to learn one blot of Gemara, which they don't even understand very well. On an objective level, we would say, well, somebody who learns 50 blot of Gemara a day is really, really great. But in fact, in Hashem's calculus, it's exactly the opposite, because one person has given only 50% of his abilities to Avodas Hashem, and the other person gives 100%. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at what you have given of yourself. That's the Fum Tzara Agra. Yochanan Wasserman used to say that is the meaning of a passage in the Rambam that says every person can be a great tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. How can every person be as great of a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is Moshe Rabbeinu gave everything that he was to Avodas Hashem, so we can give everything that we have to Avodas Hashem. Yes, what we have is infinitely smaller than what Moshe Rabbeinu had. But the point of the matter is that Hashem judges us by how much of ourselves we have given. In that sense, therefore, all people are equal. All people are equal. They're not equal in abilities, they're not equal in talent, they're not equal in objective accomplishments. But every person has this equal opportunity to have this relationship with Hashem based on what we have gone through and how much of ourselves we've given. So one lesson of Machtzis HaShekel is when it comes to Avodas Hashem, the poor and the rich, not economically, spiritually, stand in a position of equality in God's eyes. Those of you who study the history of Jewish movements know that to some degree, without oversimplifying it, this was the actual genesis, one of the main genesis of the Hasidic movements, was in fact the concept of inspiring even the simple, uneducated Jew with the sense that they too had an ability to connect to God and be beloved by God. And that, I would suggest, is implicit in the lesson of the Machtzis HaShekel of Hadal Lo Yarbe, Hasher Lo Yarbe, the rich does not give more, but Hadal Lo Yamit. So one feature, now this itself is a tremendous antidote towards jealousy and divisiveness. Because when we're jealous, we look at other people's accomplishments, whether it be more money, whether it be more kavod, whether it be more Torah knowledge, whether it be better family, more children, healthier children, whatever it might be. And we look at them and we say, they have and I don't. And that eats a person up. You know, jealousy is described in Mishlei as rekev atzamos, a rotting of the bones. It just turns everything negative and destructive in a person's life. But if a person realizes that what they have, whatever they were given, that is a potential to achieve that relationship with God, a relationship of love. And if a person does what he does with what he was given, that becomes a thing of beauty, that becomes a creation of nobility, then why would there be jealousy? Each person has a chelik which is unique to them, which is not the same as the chelik of another. I remember reading an article years ago about a woman that had a Down syndrome child, and for many years there were issues of denial and there were various psychological problems. And, you know, at the end, she came to the recognition of how even those difficult situations that God gives us can be blessings, depending on how we relate to them and what we do with them. So she gave a very beautiful mashal. Maybe you've heard this before, because I think it's well known in the special education community. She gave a mashal about a woman who wanted to take a trip to Holland, or Italy rather, and the tickets were messed up, and she wound up being stuck in Holland instead of Italy. And as she's going through Holland, she just doesn't like it at all because she's always thinking about the Italy where she should have been. And then the woman realized, but after a while she began to realize that Holland has its beauties as well. That there's a certain beauty in Holland that maybe Italy doesn't have. And yes, a person might have a dream that they wanted to be in Italy, but you know, Holland is a good bracha as well. And therefore, the equality of Machzis HaShekel teaches us that in our lives we need to see that godly potential. And vis-a-vis anyone else in the world, we stand before Hashem with that equality which enables me to recognize my uniqueness and my contribution without comparing myself to anybody else and thinking that somebody else is better. Of course, you know, there's an old story that says, you know, we never really know what other people are going through. That if Hashem would show us with perfect knowledge everything that everybody has, and there's all the mixture of sorrows and blessings in the world, and ask people, choose your mixture. If we would choose our mixture from all the choices, we would actually choose the one that we got. And that's an old story to that effect. But that's one lesson of Machzis HaShekel. But there's a second lesson of Machzis HaShekel as well, and that is, Machzis HaShekel is not only the concept of equality, but it's a well-known thought that you give half a shekel. You don't give a whole shekel. And the concept of giving half a shekel teaches us that a half cannot be whole unless it is combined with another. And therefore this teaches me as well the concept of interdependence. That I cannot achieve my shlemus in isolation. I cannot achieve my shlemus by divisiveness, by polarization, by sitting in a room and doing my mitzvos and not caring about others. I become a whole only when I connect myself to another. So the two characteristics of Machzis HaShekel are, number one, the uniformity, which teaches us equality of all in Avodas Hashem, but also the concept of fractionalism, which is interdependence. Now, in a way, you might say it's a contradiction, because the equality idea teaches me, be an individual, do your own thing, recognize your uniqueness. That's one message. But the other message is, recognize that your perfection entails that you connect and reestablish bonds with other people, because it is only in relationship, it is only in community, as it were, that the inner perfection of each individual will emerge. Again, there are so many metaphors for this. The beauty of a tapestry lies in the conflicting colors in the tapestry. A symphony is the harmonization of the different notes. The mosaic, as it were, is precisely that it's not monochromatic. And this indeed is a difficult issue that to some degree Orthodox Jews, Halakhic Jews, have a bit of a more difficulty with. And that is, how do you balance the concept of being an individual, finding your uniqueness, serving Hashem in your own voice, with the concept of being part of a community which is predicated on a great degree of conformity, right? I mean, nobody's going to say, do your own thing. You know, if you want to say Kriya Shema, you know, 12 o'clock at noon, that's fine. If you want to make a Pesach Seder, right, a person might say, well, you know, Pesach is early this year, which it is. Of course, they say Pesach is always on time. All Jewish holidays are on time. But to me, it's at night. The way we often say it, Pesach is early this year. So how's about, you know, I will have a much more elevating Seder if I make it 2 weeks after Pesach. Then I'll really be in the right mood. Can't do that, right? Hashem tells you what to do. You got to do it. So one of our great, great challenges in Avodas Hashem is how to balance individuality with the concept of joining with others in a common obligation that Hashem puts upon us. But be it as it may, again, that's really a talk for another time, we do see that the essence of Machzis HaShekel stresses on one hand my equality vis-a-vis every other person, and it stresses my need for interdependence and community and linkage. And that too teaches me about not being jealous, because it teaches me that I need each other as each other needs me, And therefore, if we work together as a common goal and a common purpose and a common enterprise, and if we recognize that each one of us has a portion of the truth of the Torah whose totality can be realized only in Achdus. You know, the Zohar says there are 600,000 letters in the Sefer Torah. It's a big kasha, there's only 310,000. But the Zohar says 600,000 letters in the Torah. There are 600,000 souls who left Egypt. Every soul has their letter in the Torah. And if that soul is not connected to their letter, the whole Torah is puzzle. Right? You can't have a Torah missing one letter. So this itself teaches me, what is the point of being jealous, of separating, of rejecting, of disparaging, when we need to be connected? And again, without belaboring the obvious sorrows that Klal Yisrael is facing at this particular moment in time, all of us know that the Churban Bayis Sheni was because of Sinas Chinam, because of this hatred. And we know that we're still in Golos because of this hatred, because the Yushalmi says, every generation in which the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt is as guilty as the generation of the Churban. And we know that Am Yisrael is going through a tremendous sorrow, and therefore, you know, it is incumbent upon us as individuals to try to rectify those averos that caused the Churban and continue to keep us in Golos to this very day. So that's Shkalim. Shkalim deals with the issue of envy, machlokes, anger, all of that is connected to jealousy, as it were, by teaching us our equality, which is a lesson in self-respect, and teaching us the concept of togetherness and achdus, which is also a bridge. We then come to the second parsha, the parsha of Amalek. And Rav Tzadok says here, Amalek deals with the issue of taiva. Now taiva, we translate as lust or sensual desire, is a much more tricky type of yetzer hara than jealousy. Jealousy and envy, we could actually say, is totally treif. It's not good. Even though Chazal have a lashon that the jealousy among Torah scholars increases wisdom, that's a different type of jealousy. That's a jealousy where someone is good and I want to improve myself because of that. But the jealousy that says, I wish he wasn't good, I want to cut him down, there is nothing redeeming of that. That's a totally evil thing. Taiva, enjoyment of the world, is more equivocal. We have contradictory texts. For example, the Gemara tells us that a nazir, one who takes a vow not to drink wine, is considered to be a sinner because he's depriving himself of a legitimate pleasure that God wanted him to enjoy. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi, and don't tell your kids, they can use it against you when they want to go for an extra amusement park ride on Chol HaMoed. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, a person will be held to account for every pleasure in this world they could have enjoyed and they didn't enjoy. God is going to say, I created this beautiful thing for you and you rejected it? Rav Shimshon Ifrael Hirsch, who of course lived near the Swiss Alps, used to say, God is going to ask each of us after 120 years, did you admire the Alps? Did you look at them? Did you see my might and my grandeur in the wonders of creation? A Jew is supposed to appreciate beauty. A Jew is supposed to enjoy the world. Not as an end in itself, of course, but a Jew is supposed to use this as a vehicle for HaKaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to enjoy. And yet, we cannot deny that there are many, many Mamori Chazal that talk about the concept of precious, separation. The word Kedusha, Rashi says, the idea of being holy is to separate, Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutar Lach. Separate yourself from even that which is permitted. And we also have to recognize too, that the more one is involved in the physical and the material, without rejecting it, but if one is over-involved in it, one's sensibilities gets blunted to the beauties of spirituality. One's heart, as it were, gets indifferent to ruchnias. The same way that if one has a diet of junk food, they will be immune to the pleasures of higher cuisines. Or if one is enamored with computer games, it'll be more difficult to read, let's say, William Faulkner or Shakespeare, because you get used to a certain instant gratification, which may give you an immediate rush, but it does not give you a long-term satisfaction. Kal v'chomer, it is the case, that the more one is involved in pursuit of the physical and the material, which is usually an instant type of gratification, the more one's heart will be blunted, and the less sensitive one is going to be to ruchnius. And of course, like all addictions, the more one gets involved in accumulations of things, the more you have to have. It's really a never-ending. Of course, Baruch Hashem, that works for Torah as well, and that's in a positive way. But whatever it is, you know, the more you have, the more you want. Chazal say, in fact, it's very interesting, I heard on NPR, before I mentioned Chazal, let me mention this NPR thing, there was a study about kids who were going shopping in malls. And one of the 13-year-old kids had a very profound remark, I thought. He said that he never buys anything in a mall, because as soon as he buys it, he doesn't care for it anymore. It's the desire. And only after, in other words, he only enjoys it when he has a desire for it. And the desire is in the acquisition, not in having it. And therefore, he was saying, his 8-year-old spends his allowance right away, and he actually holds on to the money because he just makes believe he's buying something, and then he doesn't buy it. And that way he still has that taiva. So this is the nature of taiva. Now, what does this have to do with Amalek? Rav Tzadok says the following. Amalek is described as asher korcha baderech. Literally it means they encountered you on the road. But Rashi says, korcha comes from the lashon of kriris, coldness. They made you cold. Amalek is what makes you cold. How does Amalek make you cold? So Rashi gives you an interpretation that when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they were like a scalding hot bath. All the nations were afraid of Amalek because Amalek, were afraid of Bnei Yisrael because of Hashem did all these miracles. They were like a boiling bath. Everybody was afraid to jump in. Amalek jumped in. What happened to Amalek? They got burnt. But they cooled off the water for everybody else. They showed that, you know, you can fight the Jews. Maybe we got burnt, but maybe the next time you'll be successful. That's how Rashi learns, Amalek made you cold. Rav Tzadok takes the same etymology, but he offers a different twist. Amalek represents that power within the human being that is the power of coldness in Avodas Hashem. And as a chassid, he writes, a person might go through all the motions of doing mitzvahs, but he does so coldly, mechanically, without feeling, without enthusiasm, with a sense of boredom and indifference. And that, Rav Tzadok says, is the Amalek in a person's heart. The Amalek is the korcha baderech, the coldness and the indifference of mitzvahs. And this is a very, very serious issue. This, of course, is what Yeshayahu HaNavi called mitzvahs anashim milumada. People do mitzvahs out of habit. And this, we have to say, is a very, very serious issue that we have to confront as adults, and that we have to deal with our children as well. A person could have a chinuch and know all sorts of information. But on the other hand, you know, the internet, a computer also can possess more information than a human being's mind can possess, although not always. I remember when Bar Ilan came out with their CD-ROM of Shelos Tshuvos, and they wanted, you know, it has 800 volumes of Shelos Tshuvos, and they wanted to test it by submitting inquiries. So they submitted an inquiry to Rav Avi Yosef, and then they ran it through their computer system. And they were boasting in their promotional literature that our system got 9 out of the 10 answers Rav Avi Yosef came up with. So there might be human beings that might be better than computers. But by and large, if all your chinuch gives you is data and information, what is it? There's coldness. There's indifference. How come people might be falling asleep in the middle of a Gemara shiur, but when the Super Bowl scores come in, all of a sudden everybody wakes up? Again, I'm not saying this to be personally offensive to anyone. I mean, if I would be a football fan, I might have the same reaction. But the point is, ruchnius often doesn't excite us. And that is a power of Amalek. And Rav Tzadok suggests that comes from taiva in the sense that the more one is invested in the physical things and accumulations, the less sensitive one is going to be to ruchnius. And therefore, if shkalim reminds us to deal with the issue of jealousy and divisiveness, zachor is a focus on the idea of taiva, of learning to develop within ourselves strategies to make Yiddishkeit exciting, meaningful. I shouldn't say to make Yiddishkeit, to make ourselves feel enthusiastic about Avodas Hashem. Now, how does one do that? That's a very, very difficult challenge. One needs to think about this. You know, in a way, If a person is new to Yiddishkeit, right, there's a certain excitement because it's new. But if one has been keeping mitzvahs for many, many years, it sometimes gets difficult. But in theory, every Shabbos should be a new experience. Every Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv should be a new encounter with the Divine. Every Yom Tov is never repeating itself, but it's a new Moed, a new Pegisha, a new encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one needs to give thought. And it's very difficult in a multimedia culture with so many sensory stimuli to try to take our Torah and let people see the beauty of what that Torah represents. But that is the only way we can combat the coldness and the indifference that is the hallmark of Amalek. We then come to Parshas Purah. We know, of course, that Parshas Purah is considered to be what is called the chok par excellence. Now, a chok is a mitzvah for which we have no intelligible reason. Right? What is the paraduma? If somebody is ritually impure, we sprinkle them with ashes, and they become tohar. That's fine. And yet, all the people that handle those ashes have become tameh. The problem of the Parah Aduma lies in paradox. And the paradox... but a mitzvah that is not accessible to human reasoning. And that's why the Pasuk says in Koheles that Shlomo HaMelech said he wanted to find wisdom, and he said, Rechoka mimeni, it is far from me. And the Medrash tells us he understood the reasons for everything. But with Parah Aduma, he recognized his limitations. Chok is very important in Jewish theology. Because chok does not just teach us about the chok, but it teaches us about the whole Torah. It teaches us that we're not masters of everything. There are things we don't understand. There are things beyond our comprehension. And that's not only true about Torah, that's also true about life. A chok teaches a person humility. It teaches a person to know their place. It teaches a person humbleness in the face of the divine. And of course, that itself is a big antidote to kavod, which is the concept of man mastering all, knowing all. And of course, particularly in this age where science has made such amazing strides, in the direction, at least, of creating life, whether it be cloning or taking stem cells and reconstructing all sorts of cellular structures out of them. It's very, very easy. In other words, I once heard it said that in the olden days, the wonder of life itself made people religious because people saw processes that they had no particular way of understanding, no particular way of duplicating, and they saw in the creation of life the Niflos Habore. Today, one might be jaded because one could see a lot of these processes are able to be reproduced in the laboratory, etc. And therefore, the chok is the important reminder that there are limits to human ingenuity, human creativity, human intellect. That keeps us humble, that keeps us modest, that keeps us in our place. I should also say there's a very positive level on that as well, and that is that knowing that in life there are mysteries can also give us the resilience and the courage not to be broken when things happen in life that appear to us to be inexplicable. Because rather than concluding that the world is senseless and chaotic and without rhyme or reason, I can console myself by saying this is part of God's chok, because in God's law there is a chok of the Torah and there is a chok of the world. And therefore, David HaMelech says, very interestingly, Zemiros hayu li chukecha, your chok was a song for me, the beis migurai, in the house of my terrors. What does that mean? The chok gave him comfort. Because when he was confronted with the inexplicable, he sought refuge in the idea that God's ways are good even when I cannot perceive them, as evidenced from the chok of the Torah. There is the chok of the Torah and there's the chok of life. And one teaches me that there is that chok of life. That unlike, for example, Rabbi Kushner's position that indeed, you know, life is just chaotic and senseless, and the most that God does is give us the strength to deal with it. And of course, God does give us that. God forbid, I don't deny that at all. But we also believe that what happens in the world, as difficult as it is for us to understand, and this in no way, of course, exonerates evildoers. That's obviously the case. But ultimately, there is something in the divine plan that will utilize this towards a positive end in one way or the other. This concept of chok is very interesting because human beings rebel against authority. You know, Taisa says a very fascinating thing. The Gemara tells us that the reason why you make a seuda when you become bar mitzvah is because now you're doing mitzvahs and you're commanded to do. And greater is a person who does a mitzvah he's commanded to do than a person who does a mitzvah they were not commanded to do. So Tosfos asks the kasha, isn't it the opposite? If I do something without being commanded, don't I get extra credit? I mean, shouldn't I be more rewarded? So Tosfos says a fascinating psychological insight. He says, once a human being has to do something, they don't want to do it, even if they were going to do it anyway. In other words, imagine taking an example from my experience, husband is going to do wife a favor, take out the garbage, without being asked. And as he's, you know, about to take out the garbage, wife says, be sure to take out the garbage. There will be within the human being a certain resistance to that fact. Because I was going to do it if it was a favor, but once I'm told to do something, we rebel. Try it out. The 12-year-old to the day before his bar mitzvah will learn Bahasmada Rabba, will acquire a certain resistance after the bar mitzvah. And according to Chazal, that is not only because of adolescent rebelliousness, which may of course be part of the problem, but it's because once you're mitzuveh, there's a yetzer hara. And chok tells a human being, you're doing this not because it makes sense to you. You're doing this not because it's logical. You're doing it because you have to do it. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz gave the story of Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera had cursed David HaMelech when he's running away from Avshalom, and Yoav wanted to kill Shimi ben Gera, and David said, leave him alone. But of course, on David's deathbed, he told Shlomo, find some way to get this guy because he did something wrong. I mean, exactly how is David changing his mind? Because in the book of Shmuel, David is very righteous. David basically says, if he cursed me, it was God's will and I accept it. And yet, in the book of Malachim, he does want Shlomo to avenge him. But what does Shlomo do? Shlomo puts Shimi ben Gera, it's not even under house arrest, he puts him under city arrest. He basically tells him, you are confined to Yerushalayim, do not leave this city. The day you leave this city, you will be executed. Okay. Not that bad. I mean, he has the whole city. What happened was that he was looking for his donkeys. He wandered out the city. He was apprehended. He was killed. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to say, what type of crazy person? He says, he knows many people who have never left Yerushalayim. Some people are very happy. Of course, it's a different city, but people are happy to be in Yerushalayim. It's a big city. And he's told if he leaves the city, he's going to be killed. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said, you know, if Shimi ben Gera wouldn't have been told that he could never leave the city, maybe he never would have left the city. And if he lost his donkeys, he would have gotten a servant to find him. But once he is told, you may never leave the city again, it becomes unbearable. He starts choking, never again, never again, never again. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, that's a human being's attitude. When God says that's the law, we rebel, even if we would have behaved that way all our lives anyway. That's a chok. So chok, therefore, teaches us humility, it teaches us limits, it teaches us obedience, it teaches us subservience. And that combats the emotions of kavod and gaiva and arrogance, which can otherwise destroy us. But I want to make one final point about Parah Aduma, and that is the following. Although it is true that the ashes which make a person tar and make another person tameh, is a paradox that Shlomo HaMelech found inexplicable. Nevertheless, the Svarim give us some type of explanation. Obviously, it's not the full explanation. And they say the following. Ashes in itself is a symbol of humility. Ashes are humility. But maybe the remez is, there is humility that makes you pure, and there is humility that makes you impure. How is that so? Because humility can move in two directions. there is the humility in which I know that everything I am comes from Hashem. And I am grateful to Hashem for His gifts, and therefore I will use those gifts to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not use them to look down at others or disparage others. That's the wonderful humility, the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. But sometimes there is a risk that humility can be taken in a negative direction. When a person thinks they're nothing, they think they're worthless. They think that they're not worthy of a relationship with God. And they don't recognize their greatness and potential. And that is a humility which is often called a from Yetzer Hara, because a person who is possessed of this attribute thinks on some level that they're behaving in the spiritually correct way. But in fact, that's very, very destructive. The Bali Musar used to say that a person who does not know his shortcomings is a fool, but a person who does not know his greatness is a tragedy. It's a great, great tragedy for a child or an adult, whatever, not to recognize their kochos and their abilities. Because if one does not recognize what they are capable of achieving, then they're not going to achieve it. And their whole life will be a waste because they did not become the person that God envisioned them to become, that God put them in the world to become. The story goes that the Levaya of the Chazon Ish, I think it was 1953 or 4, a bacher was crying at the Levaya of the Chazon Ish, and Rav Dessler, the great Mashgiach of Panovich, went over to the bacher and said, "Why are you crying over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik, who's buried there," pointing to the ground, and he then pointed to the boy, "Why don't you cry over the Rav, the Gaon, and the Tzaddik that's buried here?" He told the boy, "There's a Rav and a Gaon and a Tzaddik in you as well, and you have to try to realize that." So I think the Sfas Emes suggests that that is the remez, that the midah of humility that can be so purifying and uplifting and spiritually elevating, when it's taken in the wrong vein, can destroy a person as well. So Bekitzer, Rav Tzadok's typology, and I'm obviously incorporating other ideas as we talk, is that shkolim, by the equality and the uniformity idea, and the half of a shekel, teaches us how to deal with jealousy and envy. Zohar reminds us about coldness and lack of passion in Avodas Hashem that comes from Taiva. And Parah teaches us our intellectual limitations by the concept of Chok and Efer. And by eradicating Kina, Taiva, Kavod, we're ready for the fourth week, which is Chodesh, coming from the word Hischadshut. And here Tzadok makes a very important point. Sometimes we may eradicate the negative, but we don't yet concretize it by positive spiritual action. Robert Hutchins, who was the president of the University of Chicago, kind of a boy wonder, once remarked that whenever he feels the need to exercise, he just lies down till the feeling goes away because he knows it will pass. Says he doesn't let it bother him too much. Well, sometimes with spiritual growth, it's very much the same thing. There are times in life, maybe it's Yom Kippur, maybe it's the time of a beautiful sunset, whatever it is, when we become aroused, awakened, emotionally attuned, or if we haven't been talking to somebody because of a machlokas, there are times where we tell ourselves, "Why don't I just pick up the phone?" But you know, if you wait just a minute or so, the feeling is going to pass. Sometimes there's a concept that you have to seize the moment of inspiration. That's the idea of chametz. Don't let the matzah become chametz. Right? If you don't do anything, the matzah turns into chametz. And therefore, Rav Tzadok says, when you've worked on kina taiva v'kavod, try to concretize it in virtuous acts and behaviors, because then it becomes real. Otherwise, you lose the whole thing. And that is the idea of hischadshus, of renewal, and how the three parshiyos help us with that. Let me just end with a story. I know I'm running a little late. This is a very short story. There's a story about a man who was very meticulous in, he and his family were very meticulous in cleaning for Pesach. And he sat down at the Seder fully confident that he has done everything possible to be sure there's not a mashahu of chametz in his entire home. And they're sitting down at the Seder, the finest utensils and the best food and everything, and they bring out the chicken soup after eating matzah and moror with the right shiurim. And lo and behold, on the in the chicken soup, there is floating a kernel of split wheat that is chametz. And, you know, the man just faints. I mean, everything is treif, everything is chametz, everything is no good. And the man faints, and he has a dream in which he cries out to God and says, God, I have two questions. Number one, how did this happen? How did it happen? And number two, why did it happen? Why was I not zocha? So God gave him an answer, or the angel gave him an answer. You know how it happened? Will I tell you? You were cooking in the fireplace. That's, you know, those were the ovens of the olden days. And a little bird that was carrying wheat was flying over your house. And b'diyuk, exactly, when he was over your chimney, he dropped a little kernel of grain and it went into your soup and it made all your Pesach food tray. That's how it happens. Then he said, but why? I did everything. Why should this happen to me? I mean, this is a one in a million thing. Why did you have this happen? He said, all of your preparations, you neglected the most important preparation, asking Hashem for siyata d'shmaya, asking Hashem to help you, to think that you could do it all. That's the greatest mistake of all, and you'll be set up for failure. And if this is true for the mechanical and very important job of cleaning our house for Pesach, it's even more true for the very, very difficult job of cleaning our hearts for Pesach. That above all, we must remember that we must turn to Hashem for siyata d'shmaya, to have the ability to clean our hearts. So Mirtz Hashem, we should all be zocha to be mevayer, to destroy our physical chametz, to destroy the chametz shebelev, and God willing, in a time of much, much tzaras for the Jewish people, may our collective tshuva bring a Yeshua and a Geula to Klal Yisrael here and certainly in Eretz Yisrael. Okay.